Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the 641st edition of the Feuerstein's Fire American Soccer Show. I'm your host, Daniel Feuerstein. I'll give you American perspective of our clubs, leagues, players, national team, and other fabulous moments. Get your daily reading from me and other writers over at Beyond the 90, at beyondthe90.substack.com, and locally on the New York Red Bulls at ajmsportsfc.com. Chat room is open. Come on in. Discuss amongst yourselves if you like. Excuse me. If you have a question for me, I'll try to answer it to the best of my abilities. And last night, what we saw was the moment where basically it all came full circle. What we saw in this final match of the group stage in the Copa America by our U.S. men's national team was nothing short but an ultimate epic failure, an unmitigated disaster. And why was that? First of all, let's talk about the match real quick. Did they go on the front foot and try to attack? Yes. Were they successful? No. Why? Because Uruguay is that good, and Uruguay has better players than what we have. And when I previewed this Copa America tournament with Mr. Kelvin Loyola of BoliVip.com, what was the one match in the group, in this group C, out of all the three, that we had to worry about? What was the one match that this U.S. men's national team had to worry about? That match was against CONCACAF rivals, because they are rivals now, in Panama, the Canal Boys. Because why? Simply put this. Their head coach, Thomas Christensen, has done an amazing job of getting the Panamanian men's national team being more compact, more sturdy. They are actually playing a lot better than they've ever have been as a soccer-loving nation, because obviously Panama is more loving of baseball. But now look at what they've done. Now look at how they have gone into not just friendlies, World Cup qualifying, the Copa America. Look at what they've done. Even in the Gold Cup, they reached the final because they beat the U.S. They won a World Cup qualifier in their home stadium. Granted, they had a little help from us because of it was an own goal. But they still won the match. They got the 3 points. And now, again, for the second time in three meetings, well, and actually second time in two meetings, because the other one was against BJ Callahan in the Gold Cup semifinals, Thomas Christensen and Panama defeated Greg Berhalter and our U.S. men's national team. Three games at a home World Cup qualifier for Panama against the U.S., two tournament games, one in the semifinals of the Gold Cup in 2023, semifinals, and now the group stage game in this Copa America. And also, ladies and gentlemen, and even though I'm going to save most of this argument for this coming Friday night, because I will have a special edition to have more in-depth of this topic. Tonight, I am just basically spouting off my disappointment, my feelings of being upset and angry, because this is worse than not qualifying for the World Cup in 2018. This is much worse. Because apparently these players picked on this roster for the Copa America and for the Nations League semifinals and final are what all of you wanted and begged for. I don't want an American player that plays in MLS to be on this national team. If they're playing in Europe, those are the only players I want on this national team. Well, those players, as well as the head coach, failed us. Failed us as a whole. And for those of you are going to sit in front of your computers, whine, cry, and preach, only playing in Europe should we have Americans be on this national team. I hope you enjoyed that. I hope you did. Because these players got too comfortable begging for Greg Berhalter to come back, and now look at where they are. Look at what has happened. Because you can yell and scream at Berhalter all you want, and believe me, I'm yelling and screaming that he should be gone as well. But your players... Because let me just say this right now. They're my players too. But just for you in the peanut gallery, your players, this is also on you. This is also on you. The people that you don't understand that we need a mixture of players from both domestic and abroad on this national team, and these players, mostly abroad, have gotten too fat and too comfortable with this head coach, and they have regressed completely. They are at fault just as much as Greg Berhalter is at fault, just as much as this U.S. Soccer Federation is at fault for bringing Greg Berhalter back. It is also the fault of Mr. Matt Crocker, who should have not listened to these players. It is also the fault of JT Batson and Madam President Cindy Parlow-Cohn, who should not have even entertained the thought of bringing him back. And now look at what's happened. There will be no better competition to battle against until the World Cup itself. We will be in these friendlies against nations from CONCACAF, from Oceania, from Asia, possibly also from Africa, because we will not get another sniff of this competition until the World Cup, or at least early in the 2026 calendar year, because of Nations League and World Cup qualifying for both UEFA and CONMEBOL. So we are now in a bind here. And the only competition we're going to have right now up to this point is Canada, New Zealand, and Panama. Oh, yes, Canada. Who's their head coach? Let me guess. Oh, yes. He used to be the head coach of the New York Red Bulls. He did at one time for 1 year coach Montreal. He was also in Europe coaching for Red Bull Leipzig, Red Bull Salzburg, and Leeds United. And that man right now running Canada is Jesse Marsh. And oh, by the way, isn't Canada also in the quarterfinals of the Copa America? Why, yes, they are. Because even though the United States was drawn in a favorable group where you can take out Bolivia, but not enough because you only scored twice against them, you were supposed to beat Panama, but I guess not because Greg Berhalter disrespected them and Tim Weah decided to take a headshot at one of the Panamanian players to get sent off and change his card from yellow to red because of the help of VAR, and an Uruguayan side that will get stuck in, and they know how to battle, and they know how to take down their opposition. Laughing, assuming it's a cakewalk. Oh, we're going to get a result. Did you not know that Panama also needed a result to go forward? Didn't you know that? You should have, because it was simultaneous. And you know what? Got what we deserved. And now you're yelling, now you're screaming, now you're whining and crying. Well, you know what? You've got every right to do so. But for some of you saying to me in the past, oh, but they're training with the best players in the world. Oh, they're playing in some of the best clubs in the world in Europe. That's not enough. How many times have I said they need meaningful minutes? And you know what? You know what? Where are they getting it from? Outside of Pulisic, who's finally had a full season under his belt with AC Milan, it sounds like Weston McKennie's days at Juventus are done. I don't know if Weah is still going to be there, but hopefully he will. I mean, you know, Tyler Adams, as much as I love Tyler Adams, I mean, he's been out with injury most of the year, and hopefully he'll stay in Bournemouth. If not, maybe he'll go somewhere else. I don't know. But the point is this. Our goalkeepers. Tim Howard is not coming out of retirement. Casey Keller is not coming out of retirement. Brad Friedel is not coming out of retirement. Brad Guzan is not moving back to Europe from Atlanta United. And Tony Meola is doing well in his media TV personality days. What is going on over there? Matt Turner, Ethan Horvath. Oh, Zach Steffen, he was training with the best players in the world. Yeah, well, he wins the training minutes award because all he was the backup at Man City, and all he did was play in FA Cup matches and League Cup matches. Oh, but he gets one Premier League match, and oh, you see, he's playing in the Premier League. Like, one game! One game! Because Ederson is the full-time keeper for Brazil. And that's why Pep Guardiola uses Ederson to be the full-time starter at Manchester City. You know, I don't know what more I can tell you. I don't know what more I can say to you. But at the same time, this federation has been arrogant, full of itself, and they will throw away anyone who dares ask them the important, hard-hitting questions. I'll tell you right now, I want to give props to Mr. Lawrence Dockery of World Soccer Talk and Bluff City Media that covers Memphis 901 FC. And I also want to give credit to Doug McIntyre of Fox Sports for asking Greg Berhalter the hard-nosed questions. And I really hope U.S. Soccer understands that what has happened should not happen again. Some are saying they're not going to fire him. That's probably going to happen, that they won't fire him, but they should. And the truth is, Matt Crocker should be fired, J.T. Batson should resign, and Cindy Parlow-Cohn should resign as well. There has to be a shakeup in U.S. Soccer. There has to be a shakeup inside Soccer House in Chicago when they move down near Atlanta, Georgia. Because this is getting ridiculous. This is getting crazy, and this is getting insane. I'm sorry. We got problems, folks. We have problems. We have issues. We have a situation brewing right now that is absolutely going against the norm. And it's got to be
record
fixed.
Your message. When you finish recording.
Quickly. It's got to be fixed quickly, and it's got to be fixed right away. Because if not, we're going to repeat the same crap over and over again. So now, ladies and gentlemen, as we get ready for the show tonight, I'm going to bring on my first guest. He is my Colorado Rapids reporter, Mr. Patrick Quinn, as we're going to dial him in and get him ready for the show. And hopefully he's ready to go, and as we get ready to talk. No, he's not ready yet. And looks like he'll be coming on very soon as we get ready for the show, as we're going to talk about the Colorado Rapids here with my Colorado Rapids reporter, Patrick Quinn, as we get ready for the show. And let's see if we got him now.
Is not available.
Oh, looks like he's having some issues with the phone. There we go. Now it looks like he's ready. So let's see here now. Let's hopefully he'll pick up the phone, get ready to go, and we're going to have some fun. Let's see if we got him right now. My guest tonight.
927.
Nope. Looks like not yet. So let's see if we can try and get him the call. As we get ready here for the Colorado Rapids situation, let's right off the bat say this. Fourth place right now in the Western Conference for the Colorado Rapids under... Oh, and there we go. Here we go right now. Patrick Quinn, my Colorado Rapids reporter, joining me tonight. I think your phone hates me.
Apparently. Well, I think we got it working now. So
there we
got
go.
It ironed out.
There we go. Absolutely. That's great. Well, let me go ahead, Quinny, and let me go right to you. Chris Armas right now has the Colorado Rapids in fourth place in the Western Conference. You know, 9 points behind both LAFC and the Galaxy, six behind the Salt Lake. But still, though, what has Chris Armas done with the Rapids that he's been successful so far?
I think it's a combination of two things. I think the style of play kind of suits the player set we have a little bit better. And, I mean, the fact of the matter is the club did actually spend, I mean, by their standards, a fair amount of money to improve the squad. I mean, the addition of Mihailovic has made a big difference for sure. And we're finalizing the deal for Rafael Navarro, $3.5 million from Palmeiras. So, That's good that now he's starting to produce for the club as well. And, you know, getting a few people back from Europe has helped. And also staying injury-free has also made a big difference as well. We haven't really gotten bitten by the injury bug yet, but that is a little bit of the worry kind of going forward is what does this team look like when we start getting absences from some of these key players?
Very true. And, I mean, one player, like you've just said, Rafael Navarro, you're going to, you know, buy his contract officially from Palmeiras, that he's going to stay over there. 11 goals is nothing to sneeze at. I mean, what big moments has he shown that he's really committed to the Rapids and you know, making downtown Denver an important place to be for footballers?
I mean, the big thing, I mean, a lot of people will point out that, you know, a number of his goals, I think four, if I remember correctly off the top of my head, are penalties. But, you know, it's not just the goal scoring. There's a lot of little things he does, like his hold-up play is really, really good. And that helps, you know, free up other players to get into dangerous spaces and challenge the goal and that sort of thing. So, honestly, that's the biggest asset, you know, that he brings to the table. And it kind of shows that, you know, some of the potential work we need to get done in the transfer window over the summer is we need to bring in a backup guy, like a second striker that can do good hold-up play, particularly late in games when we need to rest him.
Nope, absolutely. Obviously, Omer Fernandez, Chris knows him from his days with the New York Red Bulls. What has he done to, you know, basically make the midfield just as potent as Mihailović has?
You know, he's kind of been hot and cold. I'd like to actually see him get a little bit more playing time. I prefer he gets more playing time over Kevin Cabral, but Cabral gets a lot of play time, but it still mystifies me. I don't get what we really see in him. I mean, he has improved for sure under Armas. He's gotten a lot more out of him than any previous manager, but still not anywhere, you know, close to what he's getting paid to do. But, you know, Fernandez brings us a lot of pace on the wing. He's able to take on defenders and stuff like that. He's not afraid of, you know, kind of cutting towards goal and sort of making stuff happen. And he's also not afraid to shoot from distance, which is nice and refreshing.
No, very true. And, of course, once again, back to Jordi Mihailović. I mean, you know what you're getting from him in the midfield. You know what he's capable of. And second to the club with 9 goals right now and 8 assists. I guess he leads the club with 8 assists. But what has he done to bring more confidence, not just for the fans, but, you know, how he's helping Chris Armas getting his tactics out there with the club out there in the starting 11?
I mean, he's one of those players that can create space on his own, which, you know, is usually kind of the hallmark of a higher skilled player, is that he can be on the ball and, you know, create his own space, and he just has excellent awareness and knows where to be. And, you know, that has kind of a knock-on effect with other players on the field. I mean, he's either drawing guys towards him to free up other positions, or he can find those passing lanes that a lot of other guys don't see, and that, you know, has a runoff effect of giving other players opportunities to go at goal. And that's, you know, those are kind of the big things he brings to the table. And, of course, the quality set pieces, too. I mean, he's really good from dead ball situations, and that's been a huge asset as well.
It really, really has. And, boy, I got to tell you, right now, the Rapids are really looking strong. I mean, it's been a while since the Rapids have really looked this dangerous. And, obviously, new coach, fresh breath of fresh air, I guess. What have you liked from Chris Armas that maybe in the past, obviously, his former head coaching position here at the New York Red Bulls was definitely a bit questionable. And, of course, at the 1 year he was with Toronto, he wasn't that good either. What do you think has changed over in the Colorado area that he has now improved his trait as a head coach?
I mean, I think he got some valuable experience being in Europe and just kind of seeing how, you know, clubs over there operate. And that's probably helped him kind of refine, you know, some of the things he wants to do and how to approach things. But, you know, the biggest effect he's had here, I mean, we're scoring goals. I mean, we went for just how many years where it just seemed like, where are the goals going to come from? And it was a rarity you get guys with double-digit goals, which is insane, and especially with how the league is today. I mean, if you want to expect to be competitive, you got to have at least one guy that can, you know, put up double digits. But, yeah, the fact we're scoring goals and, you know, most games it doesn't feel like if we go down a goal we're out of it, it's still within reach if we come back, whereas, you know, before when we were particularly bad, if we go down by even one goal, it felt like pretty much game over.
Zach Steffen, of course, signed with the club. And, you know, obviously Yarborough has been the starter for a good while. But, of course, look, you know, Zach Steffen was pretty good in the MLS. He was with Manchester City, was on loan last year in England before coming back. What has he meant to the Rapids and, of course, keeping them in matches in and out at home and on the road?
He's been a bit of a mixed bag, honestly. His shot stopping has been actually pretty questionable this year, and I think statistically he's been honestly one of the worst shot stoppers in recent memory in MLS with his current record. I think it's improved a little bit over the last week, but, you know, his shot-stopping ability is pretty questionable, but I think he does bring some leadership to the back line a little bit. He's also good at judging crosses coming in. I never have to worry about a stray ball that's coming in through the air into the six-yard box because he knows where to be on that. But I think we still have a lot of questions for him, and I think he's got some room to grow. But, you know, time will tell, but our keeper situation is a little bit shakier than I think a lot of us were expecting after we signed him.
We'll see what happens in your next match, and it should be really interesting to see what's going to happen. But give me your thoughts before the season got started. Did you expect them to be in the top four, top five of the West, or did you think there was going to be another year of, I hope this works?
Yeah, it was definitely more the latter going into the season. I figured if we were going to, you know, be more competitive, I think we were going to float around that a lot closer to that playoff line, you know, kind of somewhere between sixth and eighth place, and it would come down to the last week to determine whether we'd even get in or not. But we definitely exceeded that, and I mean, we've already passed our point total for last year, we've already passed our goal total for last year, so there's been pretty clear improvement. We're still not quite there yet. I think one of the big things that we've sort of been looking at is that we're beating teams we should beat, like the teams at the bottom of the table that have been struggling or that are, you know, riddled with a lot of injuries and just don't have full strength squads. We're beating up on them pretty regularly, but we seem to kind of fail to clear the hurdle when we're playing against, you know, good teams at the top of the table that are pretty stacked. I mean, the LAFC game last week was an example of that. Our game against FC Cincinnati, was that about a month ago, is another example of that. So I think there's still room to grow, and we still need to, you know, make a couple key signings in the transfer window to really shore that up and to make sure this is sustainable, particularly, you know, if we get injuries or, you know, players get signed away. I mean, there's rumors that Bombito is getting courted by Lyon in France. So who knows, with how well he's been playing, he's probably not going to stick around very long if European teams are knocking on the door.
Yeah, very true. How you like him in Canada going on to the quarterfinals of the Copa America? I know you're not happy with the U.S., but, you know, Bombito and Canada. Hey, listen, we're all in the same boat here. We're all in the same boat with what happened last night over in Kansas City. But,
exactly.
You know, but Bombito, look, you know, you're going to miss him for another game or two. So, you know, how is that for how you feel about his play with Canada?
No, I mean, it's good to have somebody to actually root for. I mean, we have a vested interest in seeing him play. I mean, honestly, our biggest worry at this point is, have we seen him play his last game for us? We don't know if, you know, we're going to get a deal inked or not. I mean, we turned down, I think the rumor was we turned down a $4 million transfer fee last week that Lyon had offered. So I think we're holding out for more money, but we'll see kind of how that plays out.
I guess so. We'll have to wait and see. But if I can ask, has everyone lightened up about ownership these days, or you still want Kroenke out?
Kroenke's still pretty universally hated. I mean, the team's playing a little better, but it's one of those things that it's been so poor for so long, it's going to take more than a improved team, you know, for, you know, half a season to really get people to take notice or to believe that anything genuine in terms of progress being made. But it's going to take multiple sustained years of success, and I think it's going to take more off the field as well to fix things, because, I mean, stadium still needs a lot of work. It's still incredibly outdated and really needs to be modernized and, you know, brought up to standard with the rest of the league. So there's still a lot left to be desired. And yeah, the Kroenke's is still pretty universally hated among Rapids fans.
Yep, I don't blame you guys at all. All right, Quinny, thanks again for joining me tonight. I will talk to you soon, and let's see what the Rapids do before League's Cup comes around.
Sure thing. Cheers.
Cheers. That's Patrick Quinn, my Colorado Rapids reporter, as he is right now feeling pretty good about this Colorado Rapids. Joining me right now, the gentleman that covers the Houston Dynamo for Bayou Soccer City. Or is it Bayou City Soccer? I still screwed that up. I know I did, and I'm very sorry. But it's Derek Stowers covering the Houston Dynamo. Derek, welcome back, and how are you, sir?
Hey, doing pretty well. You know, two wins in a row is pretty good. Pretty good coverage, I think.
No, it really is, and they're doing okay at the moment. Looking here at the Western Conference, in a playoff spot in sixth place, actually tied for fifth with 30 points with the Portland Timbers. They're only a point behind the Rapids, and I mean, look, there's still plenty of games to play before the league's cup break comes. And how are we feeling right now with Ben Olsen and crew?
We're feeling good. I think that the last time that we talked, you know, was during the Open Cup stuff, and the Dynamo were pretty beaten up. You know, the injury bug was biting pretty hard then, and it's becoming more alleviated now, and we're kind of finding our footing. I think that we're we haven't lost a game in, I think it's six matches, which is pretty good. I mean, I think three of those were wins, which is, that's pretty good in MLS, especially with, I know for sure one of them was the game on the road at DC United, and it's always – it's tough to win on the road in Major League Soccer. So whenever you get those away wins, it's always a huge boon for you. So feeling good.
No, that's great to hear. I mean, I have to ask you this, though, if you don't mind. I mean, what did Ben Olsen say coming back to Audi Field and our nation's capital, where he's played his entire career there? He was the head coach over there for so many years. And then, of course, he left to take a break, and now, you know, he's been with the Dynamo for 2 years, including this year. You know, what did that mean to him going back to Washington, D.C., and taking on D.C. United for him?
Well, you know, he's a humble guy. I mean, he's competitive, as, you know, all get out. But, you know, everybody respects their roots. And, I'm you know, for him, it's always, you know, nice to go back to where you came from. So he was very respectful. And, you know, that game itself was just bizarre for so many different reasons. You know, two penalties, two red cards. Sebas Ferreira, who had not really been that much of a factor for Houston in ages, doing his thing and getting a hat trick. Very bizarre. But yeah, he was very respectful of, like, DC, its fans and everything like that. You know, but, you know, he's a professional, so he has to perform as best he can for Houston.
Talk about Ibrahim Aliyu and Latif Blessing so far. They're both tied with 5 goals to lead the club right now. And I know the goal scoring department hasn't been that great for the Dynamo this year, but still though, what have those two meant for the attack for the Dynamo to try to keep them afloat and hanging around a playoff spot?
Yeah, it's been a lot of scoring by committee, as they say. It's been great that they've been able to step up in that sense, because we haven't had a true striker really step into that role. So you want your wingers to be able, well, and Aliyu, has been playing sometimes as the nine. But yeah, Aliu is just a fantastic winger for this league. He's incredible. And Blessing, you know, coming in, he hasn't played that many games, but he's really seized his own opportunities. It's been huge. They've been able to step in because we haven't had that pure striker role, really. So especially for the Dynamo that have been lacking in the scoring department, I can't remember exactly where we are in terms of scoring goals, but there's a reason why we're sixth, tied for fifth. And a lot of that's because of the defense has been as sturdy as it has been. But you got to win games, too, to get points. And it's been because of those players that you mentioned, Aliu and Latif Blessing, and then Seves Pereira for at least the DC game, that have really made the impact that they have. And there's other guys as well. Brad Smith coming off the bench in the DC game was incredibly huge. I think he had two assists in that. That's huge. So very, very big for some of these guys to kind of, you know, if you don't have the guy to work by committee.
Very true. Very true. How tough is it not seeing Hector Herrera out there? I think he's out with injury, I believe. You can correct me if I'm wrong, of course.
Yeah, well, he's played the last two games. I can't remember the last game he was injured, but it's he's a guy that pulls the strings. I mean, he is just so clinical at controlling the game from the midfield, and he just made the All-Star game as well, which, you know, kudos. I would argue maybe Steve Clark also deserves to be on that that list, but, you know, the All-Star game is kind of a popularity contest. That's okay. But Hector Herrera, the things that he does, especially with the back pivot with Artur, being able to get forward but also defend well but control the game, what he does is, you know, I don't know, part of the Dynamo's identity and Ben Olsen's identity of that he wants to build with this club for being a very possession oriented club. So having somebody that's able to control the ball either deep or further up the field is pretty pantomime. So, yeah.
Coco Carrasquillo currently with the Panamanian national team. Of course, you're not going to have him back for a while now. Of course, Panama made the quarterfinals of the Copa America. Now, we're not going to have you, you know, dictate or talk about club versus country and all that stuff. That's for a different time. We want to talk about Dynamo.
Sure.
But how much do you think he'll be missed still being with Panama, depending on what happens in that quarterfinal matchup over the weekend?
Coco is such an interesting figure within the Dynamo. Like, he is – when he's on, he's – you know, a 9 or 10 out of 10. And when he's off, it is just, he's lost. I think that some of these guys, like, you know, Latif Blessing, that's basically come into his role, has done such a good job. Coco really needs to make his own case for coming back in. I feel like, he's incredibly important because of how talented he is He's a guy that I think he works incredibly well coming out of the back and then distributing the ball, moving forward accurately, and then, you know, intention to start some kind of attack, but with accuracy. But when he's off, he's giving the ball away. He's making silly tackles. So it's going to be up to him in training to really earn his spot back. And this could also mean something for Amin Bassi, who has kind of been a little off his mark. So Coco could step into that role, but I don't think you'd see any of the guys up top or in the midfield really losing their spots other than him. So that could be a place for him, but he's got to earn it again. And, you know, we saw some of his silly stuff with Panama, we know. But neither here nor there. But anyways, yeah, he's got to re-earn his spot and, you know, really show he's the player that we all think and kind of know he can be.
Very true. Very true. And we'll see what happens down the road. 4 to 5 games remaining before the League's Cup break. What do you think the Dynamo need to do to try to climb up the Western Conference table? And how do you think they can solidify their position?
Yeah, it's going to be tough because we've got two games. We've got a game tomorrow against Real Salt Lake on the road, and playing on the road, as I said previously, is always going to be pretty difficult in this league, especially playing. Salt Lake is notoriously a difficult place to play in. And then we've got on Sunday, we're taking on the Western Conference leaders, LAFC, and that's going to be difficult. We haven't lost at home since April 20th. So not including U.S. Open Cup stuff. But
right.
I think if we can get a draw or something, or, you know, a win would be even better, against the league leaders, that would be huge going forward. I don't know what to expect against RSL. We've done well. We're unbeaten in 6. A win away would be great too, but you never know how some of this goes. But just getting some positive results, not getting injured, no red cards, and I feel like they're finding their rhythm. And I wrote about this in our little predictions thing, because I predicted over the weekend that we would probably draw with Charlotte, because we're pretty close in the standings with them, and our goal scoring isn't great, but we also don't concede that much. A draw felt right, but I also said if we would get the win, then that would go a long way towards building their own momentum. And if they can keep that momentum going, then that would go a long way towards these future games coming up.
Very true. It's going to be very interesting to see what's going to happen there. And we'll see what the Dynamo can do in the Western Conference before we get to that League's Cup break. And, of course, it should be very exciting to see what Ben Olsen will do here for the rest of the season. As always, Derek, thank you for your time. I appreciate it. Hope to have you back on again soon. And I will talk to you later. Have a good night.
You too.
All right. Derek Stowers of Bayou City Soccer, covering the Houston Dynamo, has joined me tonight to have some fun to talk about everything going on with the team in orange in the state of Texas. And now it's time to talk about the New York Red Bulls and their 2-2 draw over DC United. If you are an old-fashioned Metro Stars / Red Bull supporter, like myself, like the many others that have been watching this club since the league got started back in 1996. You know as well as I do, that was a crap result, and that was a crap game. Now, don't get me wrong. It was nice seeing Elise Manuel converting a penalty to make it 1-1, and it was great seeing Cameron Harper converting his goal to make it 2-2, but it should never have gotten it to that point. Why? Because they had a very slow start to begin the match. And when you get a gift of a double yellow into red against the Jaume of DC United, well, then you must take advantage. And they did not. And even though it looked like they got back into the game and everything was looking good, that poor foul by Ronald Doncor just a few yards outside of their area, and that gave Pedro Santos the opportunity to blast home that big free kick goal to make it 2-1 DC, you know what? For goodness sakes, that should never have happened. And then you're being outpressed by DC, who are down a man because of that red card by DeJong. That was inexcusable. That was terrible. And unfortunately for Red Bulls, they dropped 2 points at home again. Now, granted, their unbeaten streak at home is still intact in these 10 games. Still not enough with that type of performance. You went down to our nation's capital earlier this year, and you blitzed them at home, which what you should have done here at Red Bull Arena, and they did not. Poor start. Poor defending. Could not break through the press in that defense by Troy Lesane and DC United until you finally broke through late in the second half. Now, I understand no Lewis Morgan until the start of the second half. No Frankie Amaya because he got transferred to Toluca. No Daniel Edelman for serving a yellow card suspension on yellow card accumulation. Emil Forsberg coming off the bench finally, but late in the match after his injury situation, and hopefully he'll play some more minutes in this next matchup on the weekend. And I'm not even blaming Sandro Schwarz. That's not him. That's on the players. For the slow start, looking lost, allowed DC to get scored on by Jared Stroud, and then, of course, the poor fouling by Doncor and allowed Pedro Santos to get that free kick goal inside the near post. It was just absolutely terrible across the board. This is the oldest rival for the New York Red Bulls in DC United. You cannot drop points against them in your building. Cannot. Cannot. And hopefully they'll learn from this, and when they get ready to take on the Philadelphia Union at Subaru Park, hopefully they can break that jinx next. But without a doubt, this was not the start, and nor was this the match where they should have lost. They got a draw, but it's a loss because they were up a man from the 20th minute on. Almost 80 minutes of being up a man. And they just failed to get the full 3 points. They should have waxed them. They should have beaten them. They should have torn down the net in flames with all the goals that they scored like they did to New York City FC in the Red Wedding. That's what they should have done. But unfortunately, it did not happen. So all I can say is, and I'm saying this once again, I'm not blaming Sandro Schwarz on this. The players themselves failed until they finally got the wake-up call that they should have had before the game started. Cannot do that against a club like DC United, who is right now in the Eastern Conference in 13th place. 20 points, tied with the Union for 20 points, tied for 12th. Because of their points per game record at .95. And for the Union, it's a solid one. That's why they're in 13th. So that's all I can say right now. That should never have happened. That cannot happen ever again. And the next time you face DC United, hopefully it's not in the playoffs, but hopefully next year in the regular season, when you play them at Red Bull Arena, you've got to take them out and tell them you're not going to get us and you will not get any form of points at all in our fortress. It's great that they're unbeaten at 10 at home, but once again, this entire game was complete crap, and they should never, ever have started off that slow at all. It was embarrassing. Well, I want to thank my guests tonight. I want to thank Patrick Quinn, my Colorado Rapids reporter, and, of course, Derek Stowers of Bayou City Soccer. My name is Daniel Feuerstein. Join me once again this Friday night for a special edition on the entire collapse of the U.S. men's national team at the Copa America. And hopefully more will come next week on this program. Once again, my name is Daniel Feuerstein. Thank you very much for listening to me tonight. And as always, please enjoy your football. Thank you. Take care. So long, and have a good night. And bye-bye for now. Have a good night, everybody.